Ramadan Kareem, and welcome to A Christian and a Buddhist Walk into a Bar. My name is Jamal, and I'm a Buddhist.
I'm Jacob. I am a Christian.
Yes. And Ramadan Kareem means have a generous Ramadan, and as you might expect, this episode is about Ramadan.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad that it's not about something else.
Yes.
Well, because that would have confused everybody.
Well, you can give a Ramadan greeting to somebody during Ramadan if you're not talking about Ramadan. That's highly appropriate.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. Yes, you can. Sorry. You can, yeah. Sorry. It took me a moment to process that. Yes, you can.
That is all good. But yes, we are. This podcast will not be released on the day we are recording it, but we are recording this on the first day of Ramadan.
It will still be Ramadan as you listen to this. It so will be. Wish somebody a prosperous, generous Ramadan.
Yes, a Ramadan Kareem or Ramadan Mubarak. We have an article here today about Ramadan. Now, obviously, this is a little bit implied, but want to put at the top of this episode, neither Jacob or myself are Muslims. We don't want to claim to be speaking for any Muslims. I am fairly uninformed about Islam, so we are going to, I guess, be having our usual uninformed discussion about a religious topic through the guise of a Vox article, and deep apologies if we do get anything wrong or make any kind of incorrect assumptions. We'd love to have some more Muslim guests on the podcast, so if you are a Muslim who is listening and would like to come and correct us about all the things we are about to say wrong,
that would be wonderful.
Please reach out to us and we will absolutely have you on the pod. And we can do a follow-up episode of all things that Jacob and Jamal got wrong about Ramadan.
But, so what are we going to get wrong about Ramadan today?
Well, so we have an article on Vox, which is the most reliable of all sources. But this article is written by an American Muslim who has converted called Jennifer Williams. And the article is Ramadan, 9 questions about the Muslim holy month answered. So there are just a bunch of different questions and a bunch of different kind of, debunkings that are going on.
Half of them seem to be about the date of Ramadan, which is just confusing because for us in the West, because it runs on a lunar calendar and not a solar calendar. So
right, yeah.
There you go. There's three of the 9 things we need to know about Ramadan sorted.
There we go. Yeah. But like, Jacob, I guess a question to you as somebody who is not a Muslim. I don't know. Do you know many Muslim? Do you have many Muslim friends?
Not close friends. Heap, yeah. No. I did go to a Ramadan fast breaking. I forget the technical name for it.
Idul Fitri?
Sorry?
Idul Fitri, I think it's.
It might have been that. Yes, but I did that last year, which was an interesting kind of ceremony in itself, and then to sit eating with people who hadn't been eating all day. It was cool.
Yeah. So what do you know about Ramadan as someone coming in without much knowledge?
So it's a month-long series of fasting, which, again, moves all around the calendar to different places because it's following a lunar calendar and not a solar calendar, which has caused difficulties in some places about like things like water in hot weather and this kind of stuff. But a series of fasting with feasts kind of at the end of, I'm not sure if it's each day or there are particularly kind of significant ones during that period where everybody comes together and has a bit of a celebration. And I assume it's a bit of a kind of like month-long resting celebratory kind of thing.
Yeah, so Ramadan is effectively the Muslim holy month. So it's the entire month dedicated to Islam and to the kind of reflections and prayer of Muslims. And I guess the fasting, whilst a very, very key part of it, isn't the point of it. The fasting is, I guess,
the fasting mechanism. Is usually not the point of things associated with fasting.
The fasting is a mechanism to help Muslims reflect on what it's like to be hungry, or what it's like to actually need that spiritual discipline. And it's certainly what it's like to be impoverished, which is obviously giving to the poor is a huge part of Islam and a major part of that religion. And one of the things that I knew but always forget is that the fasting during Ramadan is one of the five pillars and duties of Islam. So, you know, like it's in line with faith, prayer, charitable giving, and making a pilgrimage to Mecca. So fasting during Ramadan every year is it's really up there. It's a majorly important thing for Muslims to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, the easy Christian comparison is Lent, right? Which, again, I also don't know too much about Lent, but my understanding is it's, you know, you give up certain things in order to kind of devote yourself a bit more to God during a period of time.
Yeah, that's true. So Lent is a period of 40 days leading up to Easter, usually, depending on exactly how you count it, to how you get the 40 days between Ash Wednesday and Easter. Normally you don't count the Sundays, which is a period of reflection and kind of quite a somber thing. So fasting is traditionally part of it. It's often when people would be preparing to get baptized, and you'd have lots of people baptized on Easter Sunday, being the Resurrection Sunday. It's kind of it's looking forward to that moment and remembering Israel's time in the wilderness, Jesus's time in the wilderness, and knowing that God is with us in our own wilderness times, because that's the promise of Easter, right?
Yeah, but it's interesting, right? I think that's an interesting comparator to Ramadan, which is really a time of celebration and joy.
Well, yeah, I see. I think the Christian practice and that's more similar to Ramadan would be Sabbath, right? Mm. Which is a Jewish practice as well, of course, which is just a celebration of rest. Mm. Or I've heard it described as a day to pray and play.
Mm.
That's the point of it. And that seems to capture the mood more of what's happening at Ramadan.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's, yeah, I think there's absolutely a celebratory mood, and I think that ties in with the feasts and the kind of the communal aspect of it, right? Because, you know, not only, you know, my vibe on Lent is that it's very much I'm choosing to give up, say, chocolate in order as like a personal reflection thing. Whereas like Ramadan is a whole community, and there are billions of people around the world all doing it at the same time, and it feels like this amazing upswell of communal kind of
so I think
religious connection.
I think if you could have gone to Europe 400 or 500 years ago, you would have found Lent like that. And possibly in strongly Catholic cultures, it still is. I don't know. But I think that says less about the practice and more about the impact of modernity and individualism and that kind of thing. And you can see bits of that happening to Ramadan to nowhere near the same extent, right? But when there's sports tournaments or that kind of thing, the exceptions that are granted and you kind of catch up with your Ramadan later is how I understand it, that like, you know, when the Olympics fall within Ramadan, for instance, and not all athletes take those, but it's available, right?
Right. And so actually
I think it's if you're traveling, there's special dispensations.
Yes, and they actually, there's a whole lot of things where you can get dispensations for. And, you know, if you're traveling, if you're working, if you're pregnant, I think it's got here, if you're menstruating, if there's, you know, essentially there's a whole lot of things that can that you can get an excuse from the imam in order to not participate. But one thing I really liked pointed out here is that, you know, if you invalidate your fast for any given day, the expectation is you'll make it up at some other point.
Yeah.
So you know, you might do a fast on a different day, or you can, you know, buy a meal for someone who is in need as a way of, you know, making up for your fast.
Yeah, I was just seeing that in this article here, and that it just seems really foreign to me, but purely because it seems a bit legalistic, and that's not the way that Christianity ideally rolls most of the time. So, like, if it's focusing on God's, well, this says human frailty and dependence on God for sustenance, it makes sense that if you're skipping that, actually you need to be reminded that you're frail and depending on God. And I'd be really interested, I don't want to speculate, I'd be interested to understand better the role of Allah as merciful and what that has to do, how that connects in with all of this.
So actually the dispensations for Ramadan rhyme this story. I know from when I was I guess it was when I was a kid, or just before I was a kid.
Hang on, Before you were a kid.
Well, it's a story I know.
Oh, sorry, right. Okay, continue. Yeah.
So my parents are both living in Malaysia, and they were living in a village, and, you know, it was a Malay village, and like pretty much all Malay villages, it was a Muslim village. So Ramadan rolls around, and there was a guy in that village who was just known for just being just, you know, not the village idiot, but the village lazy guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like the person who just never wanted to do anything, never had a job, everyone always took care of him because it was that kind of village, you look after each other. But everyone's like, oh, this guy doesn't do anything, he doesn't help out anyone.
He has our opportunity for charity.
Yeah, right. And one year he went to the imam and asked for a dispensation from Ramadan.
Mm-hmm.
And the imam was like, what? Well, yeah, why? And the guy's like, oh, no, I have a job, but it's a physical labor job, right? So, like, okay. I'm working on the roads. Like, I'm doing, you know, construction work on the roads. And I have a job now, so you know, I need a dispensation so I can, you know, do my job properly. You know, it's like before heavy machinery too much and that kind of stuff. So, like, yeah, you could go, you'd be shoveling a lot. And so the imam was like, oh, you know, you got a job, you sure? Yeah, that's fine. We can do that. So he gives him a dispensation for Ramadan. And then... Yeah, 2 days later, my mum's driving in the motorbike and sees the guy, you know, standing by the side of the road, smoking his cigarette, holding the stop go sign, and essentially he's got a labor hard labor job on the roads. He's holding a stop go sign.
There's loopholes everywhere, and right?
He's gone and got himself a dispensation for Ramadan.
Oh, that's man. Gold. There's one of the questions here in this article is, so do you lose weight during Ramadan? And I thought this was really interesting because there's all of these things around like fasting and the health benefits of fasting, and people from different religious traditions, certainly Christianity, like can have this tendency to go, hey, look, fasting is good for you. This thing that we've always known has health benefits. But the author says here that Ramadan is actually notorious for causing weight gain because eating large meals super early in the morning and late at night with a long period of low activity bordering on lethargy in between can wreak havoc on your metabolism.
Right.
And so I thought that was interesting that it's actually doesn't have positive health benefits, at least according to this article.
Mm. And I think... that kind of goes to, I think, what we were talking about a little bit before about the kind of the ways in which, you know, I think a lot of places in the world, particularly obviously Muslim places, really accommodate people to focus on their spiritual lives and on doing the Ramadan fast. So, you know, it says here that, you know, the idea is you should still go about your day. You should still go to work. You should still go to school. You should still mm-hmm. do
the normal things
right.
that you would do.
But, you know, lots of places reduce hours, right? And lots of, you know, I would be shocked if there was a business in Australia or a boss in Australia who, you know, who is a considerate boss who, when someone rocked up and said, hey, I'm doing Ramadan and actually I'm struggling a bit today, that boss wouldn't, you know, give some consideration to that person, right? Yeah, so, and I think I appreciate that fact that, you know, we live in a society, even in the West, where, you know, people's devotion to that can be a real focus. And I think it goes to the point of Ramadan from my reading, which is that, you know, you want to focus on your spiritual life for that particular month, right? You know, so in Islam, you have Friday as the Sabbath day or the day where you do prayer five times a day and you do really focus. And this actually doesn't say here. I was under the impression that you prayed five times a day during the entirety of Ramadan, but I might have got that wrong.
From talking to people at the event that I was at last year, it's a yes, you do, but there's varying degrees of observance, at least amongst that Muslim community in Australia.
It's not the same as Friday prayers, which most Muslim people
will do. Well, and it's like everybody will be at the evening prayers, or everyone will definitely be at the Friday evening prayers. Yeah. But yeah.
Right, yeah.
There are definitely, or I was left with the impression that there are Ramadan Muslims in the way that there are Christmas and Easter Christians, right?
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so, you know, I think that essentially setting up a situation whereby, you know, society does collectively observe spirituality for a month, I find really, really fascinating and really, really quite moving. I think, you know, it would be unthinkable, I think, in Christian capitalist society to give up productivity for a month for the sake of observing spirituality.
Oh, I think in a capitalist society, more generally, and this is like one of the things that Muslim communities moving to places in the West kind of find themselves adjusting to, right? Mm. And something that causes generational divide sometimes within those communities as to, well, how stringently do you observe Ramadan or not, or how attentive do you want to be to your work at the expense of your spirituality, et cetera, and so on. I think there are there certainly have been historically in parts of the world aspects where that is taken quite seriously amongst Christians. In fact, I learned at some point in the last couple of months that it's dangerous to be a donkey in Ethiopia during Lent.
Okay. Right?
Have you heard this?
No.
So this was on the wonderful podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish, is a great fact-based thing. So if you're a donkey in Lent in Ethiopia, you're much more likely to be killed by hyenas during that time. Because people are fasting, because Ethiopia is a strongly Christian country. And so that people are fasting and not having meat, and therefore not leaving meat scraps out. Oh. And therefore the hyenas are not eating the meat, and they eat the donkeys instead, right. Which is, you know, disrespectful to the animal that carried Jesus in on Palm Sunday. But
I'm sure the hyenas don't care.
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
So it does happen in some places, but it's pretty alien in our culture here.
Mm, yeah. There's one part of Ramadan which I grew up with family in Malaysia, so obviously knew of Ramadan adjacently for most of my life. I've never observed Ramadan. I have read and have been told that, you know, it's very possible for non-Muslims to observe Ramadan as a kind of as a spiritual practice of their own right. Like, it doesn't have to inherently be tied to Islam, if you don't want it to be.
That would be, you can kind of appropriate any religious tradition, right?
To that extent. I guess the point is I think that the Muslims are happy for people to appropriate.
Oh, I see.
It's not like someone's not going to, there won't be an imam that'll come out and tell you off for observing Ramadan if you're observing Ramadan as a Christian. But still just kind of,
There's probably a hooray, you're getting closer to Islam
going on with that.
I would have thought. And definitely in majority Muslim countries, or some majority Muslim countries, it's illegal to not follow Ramadan, right?
Right, yeah.
So you don't get a choice whether you're Muslim or not.
Right, yeah. Yes. I think the thing that I always knew about the not eating, always knew about the fasting. I did not know about realistically, until I was maybe a teenager or in my early 20s, did I realize that it was also no water.
Yeah,
that's another level of extreme, right?
Absolutely. Well, and this is the thing with it being on the lunar calendar, right, is that sometimes that's like 15 hours of sunlight in the day, and because it's from dawn to sunset with some slight variations in different traditions. So sometimes that's, 12 or 15 hours in the day, and then sometimes that's going to be like 8 or 10 hours of daylight, right? Mm. Depending on where you are in the world and what season it is and everything else.
Mm. Yeah.
Which the variation as an outsider looking in just strikes me as crazy.
Right.
To have it to that extent. Yeah.
Right. Do you want to talk about the lunar calendar bits of it?
Talk about the lunar calendar.
I just think it's interesting.
Okay, sure. So there's a lunar calendar as opposed to a solar calendar, where you count things by the phases of the moon, and that winds you up with very different results.
Well, and
I've just looked at the pictures. You've read more about this than me, I think.
Well, but there's also a level at which it's actually by the first observance of the moon. And so the date can be...
So you're competing to see who sees the moon?
Well, kind of, yes.
Oh, I was being entirely flippant.
No. Like, there's actually, a competition as to whether it's, do you follow the official moon sighting decree from Saudi Arabia, or do you follow, the moon sighting in your own country, right? So there are rival countries like Pakistan and Iran, which, just go, no, there's no way Saudi Arabia gets to set the date of Ramadan. We're going to set the date of Ramadan. So there's a little bit here going, since the new moon isn't actually super visible in the night sky, Muslims traditionally waited to start fasting until the small sliver of crescent moon became visible. There's even a saying attributed to the prophet about waiting to start the fast until you can see the crescent. Some people think this is why the star and crescent is a symbol of Islam, but the crescent was used long ago, used as a symbol long before Islam. This method was a bit messy, though. since things like clouds or just the difficulty of spotting the moon in some locations often led to different groups starting their own fast on separate days, even within the same country. Each community village or even mosque within the village might send its own guy to look out for the crescent, with rival groups arguing over whether the other guy really saw it.
I like it.
Yeah, so there's a fun little moon sighting competition that seems to go on with Ramadan, but yes.
Is there a... Do you know much about the Islamic calendar?
No, so and there's one other thing I just want to point out before we move on, which is that the Oxford Dictionary of Islam says the need to determine the precise appearance of Hilal, the crescent moon, was one of the inducements for Muslim scholars to study astronomy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Digression.
So do you know much about the Islamic calendar?
Not much.
Because it's interesting to me because Easter is also a lunar thing, right? This is why the date of Easter shifts around every year. But it doesn't seem to shift as much as what Ramadan does. So I suspect that what happens is that the Islamic calendar and the Julian or Gregorian, Julian, is that the one we follow?
Yes.
Let's say Julian, yes. Yeah. Calendar. No, Gregorian.
Gregorian,
yeah, yeah. Those Julians, are probably just completely out of sync, right? Yeah. Because the way Easter works is it's calculated. It's I think the first full moon after the equinox or something like that. So it moves around, but within boundaries in the same time of year. Whereas it seems like Ramadan does not do that so much. It varies greatly as to the seasonality of it.
Mm. Yeah. Have you heard of or even visited the kind of the classic tradition of a Ramadan market?
No, I don't think I have.
Oh, you all right? Right.
Is this like a Christmas market?
This
kind
is
of
like
thing?
A Christmas market.
Is there one
market
in Canberra? Can we visit one?
There might be. We can look this
we'll
up.
Find out.
After
do some research.
Yeah, but the Ramadan market is a long time tradition in Muslim, particularly majority Muslim countries, but also anywhere else. In Sydney, the Lakemba markets are famous for the Ramadan markets.
I have heard of the Lakemba markets.
And if there is not a Ramadan market in Canberra, I would posit that we should go visit the Lakemba markets at some point during Ramadan because that would be particularly cool. But essentially, the idea being that, that people have to go to work and do all sorts of different things. And so trying to cook a meal for your entire family given that you can only start once the sun goes down, really.
Oh, you can only start once the sun goes down.
No, sorry. Yeah, okay. I think you can cook earlier.
Sure.
But I think it's like, it's particularly like, torturous to try and do so because you also can't eat and you're starving.
Yeah, you want to take a bite of the capsicum as you're cutting it up.
Right, taste it as you go. And so you can cook earlier, but especially if you're working. Like if you're working, you've got to work until 5 o'clock and then go home and then cook and then and not only do you have to like cook a normal meal, you've got to cook a meal that accounts for all the two or three other meals you missed during the day. So it gets pretty tricky. A tradition has arisen in lots of Islamic places around a Ramadan market where you have, market vendors essentially set up markets where they think they start selling from like mid to late afternoon.
Okay.
Yep. And you go and you buy takeaway. It's often, it's in very Islamic tradition. So, everything's pretty cheap.
Sucks to be the people selling at the market. So for those exact same reasons, right? Like
I think if you run, say, a mutabak store, Ramadan may be your bank month. may be the month where you're really making, I think you live with
fair,
it.
Fair.
So you end up, lots of people go to the Ramadan markets and then will buy, takeaway food pretty cheaply. No one's trying to make a lot of money off anyone else, and then take it home and you can break fast and have your evening meal with that. And certainly in Malaysia there are people who only eat from Ramadan markets. Like it becomes a cultural thing
Becomes like your special month of meals,
and particularly if you're like, oh yeah, no, I'm gonna go try this store and then I'm gonna try this store and it's absolutely a really big thing. One thing I like about a kind of respectful thing, if you go to a Ramadan market in Malaysia, like no one will give you an option of eating in. Like even if you're not a Muslim and you don't have to drive, like all taken away here.
You're going home and eating this.
So but it's a lovely cultural tradition. And and then they run into the evening and then people start to eat and it becomes a big community event. And you have a night market like most nights of the week going on, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Any other fun things about Ramadan that you'd like to share?
Yeah, I guess there's a
no, comment at the end there. Yeah, you're not supposed to get angry or complain or gossip during Ramadan. It feels like those should just be principles in not Ramadan as well. Like, do you need a special month to do that?
Well, I mean, do you need a special day to pray if you don't normally pray?
Well, part of the whole point of the special day is to help and encourage you in the normally praying bit, right?
Like, so it's part of the point of the special month is to help and encourage you in the bits that are maybe harder to do sometimes.
Touché, sir. Yeah, well played. Yeah.
Although also at the end of that, so if you're not supposed to get angry or complain, how come terror attacks by groups such as ISIS and Al-Qaeda sometimes spike during Ramadan? Answer, because terrorists are assholes.
And which, I mean, you can have arguments about this, but how closely or not terrorists adhere to the religious values which they espouse is an open question.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe the last bit I want to kind of focus on is the question number 8, which is what can I do to be respectful of my Muslim friends during Ramadan? So,
good question. Yeah.
So, yes, certainly, if you don't have any Muslim friends, I would say maybe expand your circle a bit and go find some Muslim friends. It's interesting, actually. There's a really interesting event that I'm not sure if it still runs, but used to run out of this restaurant called Moroccan Soup Bar in Melbourne, called Speed Date a Muslim.
Okay,
which is an interesting kind of cross-cultural thing around, you know, that restaurant obviously had a lot of Muslim patrons and a lot of Muslim staff and was very big in the Muslim community, and was, you know, doing a lot of outreach to try and essentially get people to kind of, you know, make more social connections across religious divides, which I found really good.
That's great.
But, you know, certainly, for those of us who do have Muslim friends and who do, who do engage with Muslim people in our everyday lives, there's a point here that you can fast out of solidarity or, you know, just because you want, and like, but no one's really expecting that. Like, that's not something that, like.
And she does make the comment that people usually last about 3 days before they decide solidarity is overrated.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, there are some things, right? So, you can, essentially not eat really nice foods obnoxiously in front of people who are fasting. Like, it's like, recognize that someone here isn't able to eat right now.
It feels like a pretty basic one. But likewise, if you're having a dinner party or something like that, make sure that it's after sunset.
Right.
So that people can eat. Because, I mean, at the moment, we've got quite long days. It's still sunny at 7 o'clock at night, right?
Right.
So,
and also, you know, essentially don't offer food to Muslims during Ramadan. So, you know, there's a thing where you might kind of just even nicely just offer someone a chip or something, and people can just like unthinkingly go, and then suddenly they've broken their fast for that day, and that's actually a problem.
Which does help to be in those countries where consuming food is illegal in public during Ramadan. Like, that would be a helpful thing.
That is helpful, but at least in Australia, consuming food is not illegal during Ramadan. And as we said at the start, you know, you can use some choice phrases. Ramadan Kareem or Ramadan Mubarak. Sorry, mispronunciation. And then actually we should talk for a second about Eid, because Eid al-Fitr is the kind of the celebration that happens at the end of Ramadan.
Ah, that's what I was at. It was an Eid al-Fitr. Yeah.
Right. Yes. Yep. Yes. Well, yeah. And Eid is essentially a 3 day, kind of celebration, banquet, et cetera.
Yes.
That does occur at the end of Ramadan as a celebration of the fact that, hey, everyone's gotten through Ramadan together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I find really awesome. I guess before we finish up, I'm interested in your thoughts about Ramadan. And, like, you know, I guess, you know, from a spiritual, theological perspective, I mean, yeah, like, has this kind of changed your thoughts at all? Like, do you have any particular kind of, you know, thoughts or opinions on Ramadan?
It's probably going to be really boring, but no, it's like it's an interesting thing. A lot of religions have different religious practices that are intended to point us towards the divine in some way, shape, or form. I think my impression is actually, like a lot of religious practice, is that it can get quite legalistic, and Ramadan seems designed with that legalism in mind a bit more, which is that's fine for what it is. And like I said, there's a lot of religious practices that do that kind of thing, and that probably comes down to a more fundamental question about the nature and character of God and so on.
And I think
which is, I think, why Lent has gone a bit all over the place in contemporary Western culture, because we have this immersion in the idea of grace and forgiveness, which then gets channeled into the idea of, oh, well, it's not that big a deal. And maybe it would be more helpful to recognize that actually we should make a bigger deal of some things.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think on your legalistic point, I think there's a thing in...
And that's just, that's an outsider's viewpoint, right? Like I don't know that anybody doing Ramadan would feel that themselves.
Right.
It's just, that's what it seems like to me looking from the outside in with the lenses I have.
Well, but I think maybe that's a broader comment on Islam, because I think Islam is a very law. I mean, you know, I think we've had this conversation before, right? But like, you know, in the way, like, in a way, my understanding is that Islam is essentially a social and legal system as much as it is a spiritual one, right?
Yeah.
It centers the administration of society in its spiritual practice. So I can totally understand why, you know, there are a lot of legalistic rules around things, because that's kind of how that is the chosen method for engaging spiritually, which I think is different to other religions.
Yeah, absolutely. To the point where, and this can be appealing to people outside, like as any religion can be appealing to people who aren't in that religion, to the point where Tom Holland argues in his book Dominion that canon law is kind of developed and codified in the 11th and 12th centuries or so in the Catholic Church, because they look over at the Muslim world and go, oh, that seems like a good idea.
Right.
So they do all their own codification of things. Yeah.
Right. And I think that there's an interesting Buddhist take on this, right? Like if you accept the premise that we are all fundamentally, I guess, deluded, we're all fundamentally, you know, engaging in life in a way that is quite essentially, you know, ill-advised and not ideal, like having a set of laws to fall back on where, you're accepting the fact that your decisions are going to be wrong.
Yeah.
Right. You're accepting the fact that you don't have the right view on things. And so giving you quote unquote freedom of choice is actually a falsehood and something that will lead you really far away from spiritual practice.
Yeah, exactly. Like this is the thing, is if it draws you into a deeper awareness of your own human fallibility and dependence on God and those other things, that's great. But the same practices can also draw you into a mode of thinking that says, ah, God needs me to do this stuff,
right,
and that when I do this, I'm a good person. And that's not a thing about Islam or Buddhism or Christianity, or it's a thing about human nature and the way that we interpret the things that are supposed to bring us closer to God and make them all about us, which, yeah, we're wonderful at.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It does remind me of a time a Christian and Buddhist walked into a bar. And they were walking
after dark in Ramadan.
Yes.
And the non-alcoholic bar, all of the, and Nazarene was there.
Yes. A Christian and Buddhist walked into a coffee shop after dark during Ramadan, and Nazarene was there. And Nazarene, being a Sufi, was obviously observing Ramadan, was in on the whole thing, and he was, you know, sitting back eating his dates and, you know, enjoying the fact that he could stop fasting for that day, they were talking to her, and Ramadan had just started, right?
First couple of days.
Yep. And Nazarene was saying, he's like, oh, I just like, I was really shocked by how quickly Ramadan came around this year. I was like, well, what do you mean? It's like, well, you know, the calendar issues and it keeps going backwards and I never know when it is. And like the year just started and I didn't realize that. And like Ramadan just, it approached really fast.
Go on.
Because it was a fast.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I thought there was a Ramadan thing something.
Ramadan approached very, okay, very fast.
Yep, yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
You know that thing about if you have to explain it anyway.
I never claim that my jokes are any good. I will give up on jokes for Lent and we'll see how that goes.
But you know what is very good?
Kevin MacLeod.
Correct. And his music, yes, which you get to hear in your earphones, speaker, however you're listening to this every week.
That's true. And please pass this podcast on to a friend. Give us a bit of a share around and email christianbuddhistbar@gmail.com if you want to have a chat.
If you're in Canberra, you can join us in an actual bar after sunset each month. We'll see you next week.
Bye.